We're all leaders in some type of way, shape, or form. I always say that leadership is supposed to be fun, and it's not supposed to be something of a dictatorship. It's not supposed to be perfect, but it is dealing with people. And people never go out of style, just like birth and death. And so if you're going to work with people, regardless if it's in a student organization or maybe the job or a career that you've chosen, you have to learn what that means for you as an individual. Then you have to then do the same with the folks that you come in contact with on a regular basis.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. We tell the stories of people who are defining the future of work. Our guests walk the tightrope, away from meaningless toil, and towards work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell, and the insights that they provide, will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. For most of the spring 2020 semester, getting a college education meant telelearning from home. Community aspects like friendship and campus life were sidelined by COVID-19. When the fall 2020 semester begins, many institutions will welcome students back to campus, albeit in a manner that is shaped by the pandemic. And at Ithaca College in New York, undergraduates will again seek out leadership development opportunities that they can use to shape postgraduate meaningful work careers. The pursuit of meaningful work is a big driver for that institution. Back in December of 2019, I spoke with Courtney Owens, the Assistant Director of Student Leadership at Ithaca College. Courtney describes how she and her department provide resources that students can use to connect well with the workforce, but also to make a difference in the world and with people. Our conversation occurred just days after I appeared at a student leadership forum on that college's campus. Welcome to the Tightrope, Courtney Owens.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. I thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. So an important bit of disclosure here. You and I met up serendipitously in the summer of 2019 at United Airlines gate at O'Hare Airport heading back to D.C. And I was in Chicago at the time doing three interviews for my podcast that had gone really, really well. And what happened that I remember how we met is we were both plugging our phones in at the power pedestal at the very same time. I looked up, I saw that you were wearing an Ithaca College shirt, and I asked, did you attend? And you said, I'm a staff member there. And then I pointed to my wife and I said, my wife and I are both Ithaca College graduates. So that conversation started. I learned about your work in the student leadership program at Ithaca College. And you discovered my work into meaningful work. And that's how this conversation took place today. And it's how my appearance at Ithaca College this past week took place, where I was one of a few participants in the IC Student Leadership Conference. About that, tell us about student leadership. What's the program about, and what do you do as assistant director?
So as the Assistant Director for Leadership Programs here in the Office of Student Engagement, the essential part of my role is to help students refine or identify some of their leadership skills if they are already aware of them. If they're not aware of them, my hope is that I am able to help them seek out what they're made of in terms of their leadership skills and where they need to work on through the number of programs such as the IC Student Leadership Conference, Student Leadership Institute Program, Leadership Weekend, which is a first-year program specifically for first-year students who are seeking to build community, and a couple other things. So my role is to help students identify what leadership is to them and how that is applicable through their collegiate experiences and beyond.
Why is it important?
I think we're all leaders in some type of way, shape, or form. I always say that leadership is supposed to be fun, and it's not supposed to be something of a dictatorship. It's not supposed to be perfect, but it is dealing with people. And people never go out of style, just like birth and death. And so If you're going to work with people, regardless if it's in a student organization or maybe the job or a career that you've chosen, you have to learn what that means for you as an individual. Then you have to then do the same with the folks that you come in contact with on a regular basis. And that is a form of leadership. It's human interaction. It's being ethical when you don't want to be ethical. It's being morally true to your purpose and to your perceptions, even when you're being challenged. It's dealing with difficult people and having to make some pretty difficult decisions or some decisions that are fairly easy and thinking, you know, about things in hindsight. So leadership for me is a combination of a holistic development as a whole, because we're leaders in our own lives. There's no one in this world who are taking steps for ourselves. We are the ones who are putting on our shoes daily and walking that tightrope, as you'd say.
Indeed. And when I presented to your student participants, one of the things I said was that as we entered as first-year students, very ambitiously, I and the Park School of Communications, we didn't have this meta-narrative of leadership, of emotional intelligence building that students today at Ithaca College enjoy. And I think the absence of it hurt us. We were extremely ambitious and very, very successful. But outside the School of Communications, outside the Park School, many of us, me included, were considered brash and arrogant and selfish and pushy and hard to work with. By contrast, what I noticed from talking to some of the participants in the program this past weekend was mindfulness to a certain degree, thoughtfulness, and a we attitude. It's not all about me, it's about we. How do you relate to that, Courtney?
Again, you mentioned something very telling about the we portion. Now, I'm an only child, and I can say that I typically have never or struggled with that we aspect. It's always been about me. It's always I, right?
Right.
Even in college, even in school, it's always been about me. And so now that I'm in this role and I am challenged to shift my mentality to think about the we portion, I think that it is very important. It challenges you outside of your comfort zone to think deeply about your decisions, to think deeply about your thought processes and your critical awareness. Because again, leadership is a cohort of people. It is a group. It is more than just you. It's an impact that affects larger portions. It's like throwing a rock into a puddle or a pond. You see those ripple effects of waves, kind of, sort of. So you think about your role as a leader, whether that be big leadership or small leadership, and you think about that impact. And so you have to think about that we. It's like taking care of a relationship, even when you are not intimate with these people, but you are making sure that whatever your goal is moving forward, that you all can achieve that together.
You know, one of the things that struck me in engaging with some of the students and focusing on my own long career over four acts of doing different things was that when we left Ithaca College many years ago, we were prepared to do work, very specialized work. We weren't prepared to work with people. And I know from my own experience as somebody in the workforce, but also as an executive recruiter, that my cohort, late baby boomers and then the Gen Xers that followed, often had difficulty in work because they didn't know how to navigate relationships with people in the office. We all have our missions, we all have our stylistic differences. And as a recruiter, I often dealt with people who said, I got to get out of here. I can't work here anymore. It wasn't the work, it was the people. What I think you all are doing at IC now in student leadership is preparing students who graduate for working with people, for engaging with people. And I give you props for that.
Thank you.
So when we first met up in Chicago, and I told you about my focus on meaningful work, work that's profound, protects the planet, helps people, is fun to do, and is often of the heart, that seemed to grab your attention. And you mentioned to me that that is a big focus of your department. What does meaningful work mean to you, to your participants in the program, and how does Ithaca College embrace it?
Well, I will start from your last question about how does Ithaca embrace that. I think we're dealing with a senior leadership team of individuals who are challenging the status quo of education, and it is requiring folks who serve our students as well as our institution to think about our choices and to think about the work that we're doing that is intentional to meet some sort of an end goal for the students who so graciously pay their tuition here to Ithaca College. And so I was a student. I was in undergraduate and graduate school, and I'd say that just thinking back to my own undergraduate experiences, I had no idea what intentional work meant. I had no idea about the meaningfulness of being involved and civically engaged with intentions to meet my next opportunity, as a mentor would say, your next, with intentions to thrive. And so I think about those things from an aspect, and I think about how I am the youngest in my department right now. And I think about the needs of students and typically how we want them to move in this world. And I think a lot of what is missing is that intentionality. And so for me, because again, leadership is all about self-awareness and it's about checking in. It's about making sure that you are comfortable and confident in yourself to navigate different crowds of people, whether they look like you or not. But it's also to kind of take the reins in your own hand to navigate your tightrope in a way that is ethical for you and it is steadfast and moving forward. And so when I think about the types of experiences that students talk about, there doesn't seem to be meaningful experiences. It doesn't seem meaningful. I mean, it seems like, oh, it's a requirement or they want this degree and then they want to get this money, as they'd say. Mm-hmm. But how do you do that? Because you can have it all, I'm sure. But how do you do that? You know, how do you ensure that students aren't thinking just about the transactional piece of, if I do this, then I'll get that. If I do this, then I'll make this type of money. Or if I do this, then I'll be able to live this type of lifestyle. Instead of thinking, if I take advantage of networking, if I take advantage or if I take a chance to say yes to an opportunity that can enhance my skills and to teach me something that I can't learn or haven't learned in books or in the classroom, or maybe I can take a few things that I've learned in the classroom and I want to learn how I can apply it to my everyday lifestyle, how can I do that? So that's the types of things that I want students to think about versus, well, I'm just going to school, I'm going to class, I'm making the grades, and then I'm going back to my resident hall or I'm going back to my, you know, off-campus apartment. I say that if you're going to pay all of this money to attend an institution, because again, we all know that higher education is a business, but if you're going to enter into this business, you would want to learn about it and gain all that they can so that when it is time for them to move forward, they can leave a little wiser than they came. And also just to be, you know, a civil citizen too. We're raising, as educators say, that we're raising generations. And just as though, you know, folks came before you, you know, they kind of taught you the way in the same way that, you know, we're doing that now. So I read often and I think about philosophy, and I have someone in mind right now who was talking to me about the importance of looking up to the next age clans, right? And so, again, it's about setting those examples. And so here it is. Like, I am closely related to the students, and I'd say that the success that I've already had, it didn't come overnight. I had to be realistic about it. I have to be realistic with the students. I have to be realistic with myself. And I had to learn as well. So I would want students to kind of gain that early on versus later. But if they have to gain it later on, then, you know, so be it.
How do you measure your success then? Do you check in with some of your graduates over time to see how they're doing in their careers and their lives? It's not really a return on investment. Maybe it is. Not a financial one, but it's a lifetime one.
Sure.
How do you measure it?
You know, I am a firm believer in checking in. You know, I am very spiritual. And so I typically think deeper about the work, even when sometimes I don't want to do it or I feel that it is busy. I think about the impact and the life's purpose. I listen to a lot of folks in leadership, even from our own institution, and I read books about leadership and think about the materialistic things that don't matter to me. For me, I understand that, of course, you want to have a career that supports your lifestyle, but you want to do that in ways that it's not materialistic to say, well, again, if I do this work, I should be making this type of money. That's my success. That's my check-in with success. Success for me is being able to be afforded the opportunities to serve in leadership roles such as this one. It's not necessarily a monetary thing, although as time goes along, you would definitely want to be compensated for your work. But I think as time goes, you know, we think, and you talk about, you know, my graduate cohort that I still keep up with to this day. Some of them are out in St. Louis and working at the Ohio State University. But we all talk about our role in this world, and we are chosen. We were chosen to be educators. We could have done anything in this world, but we have been chosen to be educators. And so we know specifically as Black men and women, there are not a lot of us in this field. There are not a lot of representation. And for some reason, education is kind of like that mecca, right, for success. So we say, But what does that really mean when we check in with that? Like when we talk about diversity and inclusion, when we provide lip service to that, what does that mean? You know, so success for me is being able to then impact and kind of leave that green cash cow for the next set of individuals who will be here long after I will. Again, if I don't want to do anything that I'm not happy with, that's not fulfilling, and there are days in the job where things aren't fulfilling, but I find other measures outside of work to then walk in and on my purpose. And then I still explore with that too. I know that I'm going to be serving multiple purposes, but I'm learning about them daily and I'm going through transitions because, again, as leaders, we are transformational.
One of the things I noticed watching you engaging with the students in participation was how genuinely kind you are and how interested you are in them as people. And I have to tell you, Courtney, it didn't go unnoticed by them. I think they feel like you got their backs.
Sure, I do. I do. I just had a conversation with a couple of students that I advise right now. And before being on this call, I was dealing with that. So thank you for being patient. I said something simple to them that, you know, as their advisor, it's not my role to throw them underneath the bus, right? And there's no need for them to be embarrassed but per the decisions that they made. Instead, you know, my role is to support them and speak on their behalf. My role is not to down on people, right? Because that comes back full circle. And also, I may mean business and I may mean what I say and say what I mean, but I'm doing it out of love every day, or at least I try. I put it out in the universe to say, hey, you know, help me to lead unconditionally with love, right? And help me to receive things with unconditional love as well. Because again, you can't, you know, yell at people or you can't be a dictator and expect for good results to come back. And so that's a key essential part for me to lead with unconditional love and to see people for who they are. Sometimes it is difficult. I'm not perfect.
This is an exciting time for you. You are on the leading edge of impacting meaningful work. It's a delicate measure. On one hand, you want to help your subjects do their work well, but also be emotionally intelligent about how they engage with the world. I have to tell you, that's fantastic. Not every institution in the United States is doing the kinds of things that you are at Ithaca College.
Correct. And again, like we're not perfect. You know, I listen to people, and interesting to be human with other individuals, because I feel that so many of us, you know, we see each other daily, and the types of faces that we put on and the facades that we put on for other people to convey this picture of perfection. And sometimes it's misleading, right? It's misleading, and you don't know who these people are, and you don't know why they're doing what they're doing. But it's like really getting in touch with the heart. And I am a firm believer that we create boundaries and we create isms for multiple reasons. But when you look past all of that, and when you really get to the root cause of some of these issues, it's the hearts of the people. That's the biggest challenge to change, because you can't change people, and people are resistant to change. Even the folks who are trying to do the changing, right? So it's a fun challenge. I don't know why leadership is something that I am genuinely interested in. I don't do enough reading. I have a couple of books that I want to get into about identity and leadership that I haven't gotten my hands on, but it is at home on my bookshelf. But I don't know what it is about leadership that has chosen this route for me. I'm definitely a people's person, but not a people's pleaser. And that's like a quality trait that I keep. And it's interesting. So I'm still learning about that, Dan.
Yeah, but you're genuinely interested. It was the first impression we got when we met you in Chicago, my wife and I, was how engaged you were and how curious you were to meet us and learn about what we were about and we about you. One of the things I mentioned in my presentation was this change in the American dream, which may seem like a foreign concept to the students at Ithaca College right now and across the country.
Correct.
Back in my day, the American dream was the same it was for my grandfather, who emigrated here from Ukraine in 1913. You can start with nothing and build something and work your way straight up a ladder, was the model
that I
described. And it was all about upward mobility. Since 2008, 2009, since the Great Recession, that model has crumbled. And according to Pew Research, it's been replaced by a new American dream, which is about economic stability. Not falling apart financially if you have a medical need or some sort of crisis in your life, to be able to weather that. At first glance, that's pretty brutal. But on another point, it's actually changed how people go about work. Our priorities are not about upward mobility anymore because we can't achieve it the way we used to. It's about actually going towards things that are meaningful to us. And one of the things I said to the group was that instead of going up a ladder, Your career progression may be like rock climbing. You might go up and down. You might go side to side. How do you think the student body, or at least the students that you participate with, feel about that need for agility and that need for pivoting often?
It's interesting. I have, you know, parents that are still married, and they had prominent careers in regards to them being, you know, in the United States Army, and they're pretty dedicated to their work. And I realized that the generational differences between folks in my age group and then folks in their age group is the dedication piece and the need, or the lack of need, for instant gratification. I think a lot of us, and I say us because I am too a part of that generation, we have a lot in front of us between social media. Instagram, it's huge. Twitter, you name it. But we see a lot of quote-unquote success, because I talked about the many faces and facades that people put on for pictures of perfection, right? We see it, and we want exactly what these people have. You know, we want to be agile. We want to be able to work on our own. We want to be able to work like a boss, not underneath a boss, right? We want to be able to just do what we want to do when we want to do it, and to spend the type of money that we want to spend, and to do it quickly. Like, we want that type of instant gratification. We want to be on vacation with our feet up. Like, we want that freedom. Right. And I think everybody wants that freedom. I think that the grind was much different for those who have, you know, been born in the 60s and the 50s and the 70s versus those who are in the 90s. And I'm going to say 95, 96, but anything prior to 90 and 93 and 94, I think we were the last, like, good bunch of those with common sense and a little bit of grit about us, with that ambition. And then I think moving forward, you know, you have a lot of the stuff that just thrown at us, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, again, instant success. And so I think there is room for genuine ambition. You have some students and people in general who are very ambitious, and they want to make that impact. They want to be known for their impact. And that for them may be success, right? And I fall short of that sometimes, because I'm thinking, well, I do some of this work, and, you know, I want to be known for my work. I want to know that what I'm doing is worth it. You know what I mean? Like, I look at members from our senior leadership team sometimes, and there's one in particular who I adore and just look up to. Mm-hmm. And whether she knows that or not, I'm like, man, I want to be just like her. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily like her, but definitely someone who is serving in this role and is moving, you know, in the way that she is. And so I have to check myself from time to time. And I think about that iceberg, the things that I see up top versus the things that I don't see at the bottom. And it requires me to critically think about myself. And in my own leadership, I think about my needs, my negotiations, non-negotiables. I think about the types of, you know, agility and grit that it takes to get to where that person got to. And it's a reality check. Right? And I think a lot of us miss that. And we go back to the American dream to say, you know, you could have it all. This is all you have to do. You could be somewhat of a videographer on Instagram, or you can be someone who's making memes all day and make, you know, millions of dollars, right? And so typically that is associated with success, but realistically, that's just not the way.
Right.
And it takes a lot of us to kind of do some self inquiry with ourselves to say, hey, you know, let's get back to the drawing board and let's think critically about what it is that I'm doing. And I also don't feel that the society gives us that chance, because it's very linear. It's like, you know, talk to students and like, okay, well, I'm getting ready to graduate in May. I need a job by May 31st, you know, because the universe makes you feel like you have to be on the grind instead of taking that break. So there are many factors, but those are the ones that I can definitely think of right now.
Well, I think that's a major opportunity for you. I picked up on that as well, that there is among the cohort that you work with, the Generation C students, a fear of not connecting up with work immediately after college. You know, for me, it took me 6 months before I had my first full-time job. I can't imagine the stressors that this group is going through. It must be very difficult.
There's a lot of things. Just a lot of pressures. I think it was different when I was coming up in school. I definitely felt the pressure. I did know that I was going to grad school right after undergrad, so that wasn't really much of the pressure that was on my shoulders. But definitely after I graduated from grad school, it was like, ooh, I need to like be employed right now. But societal pressures to be and excel and to, you know, kind of extend or overextend your brain power. That's typically, you know, what the wave is, I feel. You talked about, you know, being a headhunter for a while. And, you know, it's like that grind of this is what you have to do, you know, and you feel that way. You feel that, you know, you have to support your family. You've got to support our lifestyle. And you also have to be human. You have to do things that you like to do. But, you know, that made ends meet for you and your family, right? regardless if it killed you, if it made you feel the way, you did it for X amount of years and you got to a point to be like, you know what, this isn't for me. And you left, right? And so there's a lot of power and privilege in that as well versus other folk who may not be able to do that. The compensation is, well, if I'm paid, you know, $100K, $150K, I'll stay. And I learned that being in grad school, I took a grad assistantship working for our student union. I was a facility manager, had no idea what a facility manager did, but I was connected with the supervisor and one of my sorority sisters who was a student affairs professional. And we still talk right now. Mm-hmm. But she was like, hey, go talk to, you know, this person. They've got a graduate assistantship. Do it. Go. See what you can get. Follow her directions, and I instantly received the graduate assistantship. They were paying a stipend of $700 to $800. They paid over $1,000 worth of my class, my courses. And so I took the job, but I disliked it. I disliked it for many reasons, but it taught me a lot, right? And so thinking about leaving and thinking about being intentional about the things that you accept, again, goes back to just that societal pressure of, oh, you have to have your next lined up immediately.
One of the things I tried to express to the group that I spoke to over the weekend was this cautionary tale of being so focused on money and success as I was as a graduate of Ithaca College, as, by the way, 95% of my cohort was, of attaining success and then getting jammed up with the downfalls of it. Mm-hmm. Supporting a client of ours when I was in advertising and marketing that, as I said, had a product that killed people, and having to rationalize the fact that I was making a lot of money and that I was 27 years old and I had all this responsibility. That was the first of many levers in my career that got me to this point of seeking for myself meaningful work and helping others support their journeys as well. And I think it reached some of the people in the room to say, okay, it's not a requirement that I go after the Benjamins. Maybe I can do this for the why aspect. Why do I want to do this? What impact do I want to make on the world? And I was really pleasantly surprised with how many people came up to me and said, thank you. I understand I might have a long and varied career with a lot of different jobs. While they may not be completely comfortable with it, there was an acceptance that that will be part of my normal. I'll just make it work. And that's a very, very good thing.
For me, you know, it's just being in tune and being honest. I was just having this conversation with my mother. I was, you know, telling her there are days when I'm sitting in front of my computer, I'm in my office, and I feel that some of the work that I do is busy work. And it's not necessarily fulfilling. And I was talking to a mentor of mine, Dr. Holland from Western Kentucky University. She's the chief diversity officer. And she served, I call her the Oracle, she served as a wise individual. But I was telling both my mother and Dr. Holland that I, you know, what I'm doing is something that I would want to do regardless if the pay was there or not there. Right. I don't want to do something and have money attached to say, oh, I'm only here for that, because it's not fulfilling. It's not, you know, I want to be able to do something and to enjoy it. Right. And to feel like, you know, it isn't a job. And I said, you know, every day is not necessarily going to be that way. And there was a time, you know, here at IC that I was feeling kind of unenthused. And I was concerned because I typically try to give, you know, 110, 110% or more. But I had been giving like 75. And it was bothersome because I know that that's not the type of quality efforts that I provide. You know, like I said, my first year was really rough with the transition. So now I'm learning from, you know, my previous year with, you know, hopes to progress in my second academic, and to really like learn. Right. And so I was saying that I wasn't feeling fulfilled, and I was in this funk kind of sort of, and I was like, wow, you know, am I really supposed to be doing this leadership thing? Am I really supposed to be here? And I felt bad for questioning the universe, simply because I know that I was sent here on their behalf. Right. And so it was a conflict. It was a battle, you know, between my purpose, you know, my sole purpose and the job. And so my mentor and my mother, they were like, you know, you're here to make ends meet, but there's a deeper meaning behind what you're doing. And every day is not going to be satisfied. If you're not going to be satisfied, and it's not going to be satisfactory, but you have to find other things outside of work to kind of fulfill your purpose. And that's exactly what I'm trying to do now. But, you know, it's trying sometimes. And again, I just started out with a career. So I can't speak for anything past what I've already experienced, but I know that as you move forward and you go to do different things, those are the types of things you should also keep in mind, right? I'm not saying that you should accept a job and they're not going to pay you for your compensation or pay you for your work, right? Don't do that, ever. But, you know, if you've earned and you've done what you're supposed to do, you definitely would want that to compensate you, you know? But don't let it be the hustle of your hustle.
My impression of you as a leader is that, like all leaders, you suffer doubt and regret and second guessing. That's not a bad thing, Courtney. It actually helps you grow. And if you didn't say these things, I'd be scratching my head. So you're doing all the right things. And good on you. Good on you.
Great reassurance.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'm so encouraged by this serendipitous meeting that we had. It provided me with an opportunity to give back to a place that I invested 4 years of my life and that still resonate with me. So one last question from you, which is on this idea of meaningful work. For somebody listening to this podcast, and we have a national audience, if somebody wanted to pursue work that is meaningful, that is profound, that protects the planet, that empowers people and communities and is fun to do, what advice would you give them to get started?
I would have them pause. One, I would have them pause and to take a look at their lives from whatever age they are till right now. I am looking at some things and I think about my life as a whole. If you can think of like a bubble, right? If you can just picture, if you can close your eyes and picture a bubble, right? And you're in the center of that bubble. And outside of that bubble, you have a social life, you have your family, you have your community, and you have all these subcategories, right? And I think it is important to stop and pause and to think about those people who you include in your life, because essentially you're a representation of them, vice versa. And you think about the types of conversations that you have, you think about the types of work that they're doing, you think about the types of impact that they're having on your life. And you figure out, you know, is this something that you want to continue? Is this something that you want to better? Is this something that you're okay with? Are you content? And if you answer yes and no to some of those questions, then that's your starting point. You know, if you are struggling to find some friends of value, you know, and you've not necessarily grown socially or you've not grown to learn about yourself through them, you know, you pause and you think about the types of examples that you've seen. If you're thinking about yourself in terms of what am I missing from my life? You know, what is it that I don't know? Also understanding that, you know, you have to mature. I didn't start talking like this or speaking this way at the age of 5, right? There were a lot of types of environments that I was placed in per my lifestyle, per my parents who have kind of curated me to operate like this. And then I had my own experiences when I wasn't around them. And I had friends and I had to make decisions to do the right thing or not to do the right thing. And there were times where I didn't do the right thing. And, you know, I had to deal with that. But there were times of processes in that maturation period to get here. And so it just takes, lately I've been in my, I'll be 26 next Tuesday. And so I'd say that a lot of folks have said that it's beyond my years. And I didn't understand it. I was like, yeah, okay, sure. But I think just for me, it causes me to pause. It's like, what type of a lifestyle do I want to live? And a realistic lifestyle, too. And it comes with my friends, that comes with my coworkers, that comes with the way I dress, the way I talk, that comes with the types of experiences that I want to have. I'm not limiting to anything that is good. Of course, I'm not going to do anything that's going to kill me or anything like that. But, you know, life is really too short. It's really short. And I think this year alone, I've definitely taken life a lot more seriously. And I've taken the grind a lot more seriously. And again, I talked about instant gratification. There are days where I get ahead of myself and I have to draw back. I do. I'm like, I want this to happen now. But it's just, you know, you just get to a point of pausing. Like, what is your role? You know, everyone gets to explore the vastness of this world. And I really want to be able to do that in the way that is beneficial for me and for other people. So I pause, I write, I journal, I definitely talk with other people. I run things by folks who are older than myself. I run things through people who are my age. I'm challenged daily. I make sure that I challenge myself or that other people challenge me. So it's just, you know, being in tune with the self and having to heal those areas that aren't always the best. But it takes a while. It really does.
Courtney, that was beautiful. Thank you so much for lending your thoughts about meaningful work. Before we sign off, where would you point people to social media to learn more about the student leadership program at Ithaca College?
So you can find us on Google, of course, if you just type in the Office of Student Engagement at Ithaca College. You'll be directed to our webpage. There you'll find a lot of resources Specifically in the leadership development tab, you'll find all of the things that we do in our office dedicated to leadership. All types of applications and leadership roles can be found on our website should you be interested to talk with a staff member. You can follow us on Instagram at OSC, and that's O-S-E at Ithaca on Instagram, I believe. I think we have a Twitter. I don't know if we actually use it, but The website is definitely somewhere that you can definitely get and gain some additional information. And then, of course, staff directory. All of our bios are updated, pictures included. Our emails are all there. Phone number is all there. We'd always be happy to introduce and help change the narrative of what student engagement is for those who are seeking to learn more about what that is for them.
Well, I thank the universe for bringing us together. This has
been
a great, great experience.
Yeah, it has. Really, it has.
One that I know will continue, and I hope we can get you back on the tightrope at some future point.
Hey, anytime. Thank you for choosing me, and thank you again for the universe for bringing us together.
Important social media links are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who walk the tightrope to seek and do meaningful work. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Tightrope Podcast. Together, let's walk the tightrope to find and do meaningful work. For the future of work is meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Have a great and successful week, everyone.